bhavatu sahanau bhunakthu sahaviryam karavavahai tejasvi navadhitamastu ma vidyavishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Okay. So now, okay, so this is on the principle that since you are fools desiring material benefits and do not know what is good and bad for you, how can I in knowledge give those things to you? Srila Prabhupada adds, there are two classes of men, namely the Kripana and Brahmana. A Brahmana is one who knows Brahman, the absolute truth, and who thus knows his real interest. Right? Because if you know Brahman, you know the actual interest, because we're Brahman. Right? The material world, the problem with the illusion is we're looking at it as not Brahman. We're looking at it that it's a place of enjoyment. It's a field of sense enjoyment. Well, no, it's actually Brahman means it's Krishna's energy. Right? Does that make sense? A Kripana, however, is one who has a material bodily concept of life. They don't see Brahman. They're not interested in Brahman. So whatever we see materially, they're not interested how this connects to the Lord. That's a Kripana. A Brahmana is how does everything connect to the Lord. The Kripanas who always desire material benefits are foolish, whereas Brahmanas who always desire spiritual benefits are intelligent. If a Kripana, not knowing his self-interest, foolishly asks for something material, one who awards it to him is also foolish. Krishna, however, is not a foolish person. He is supremely intelligent. If someone comes to Krishna asking for material benefits, Krishna does not warn him the material things he desires. Instead, the Lord gives him intelligence so he will forget his material desires and become attached to the Lord's lotus feet. Footnote 9. In the case of Dhruva Maharaj, although the Lord awarded him with that which he desired, first he awarded him with the intelligence to forget his material desires to the point where he no longer wanted such petty benedictions. Right? So the point is this, those things can be there if you don't want them. Because if you want them, you'll get distracted by them. But if you don't want them, you just want the Lord's service, then you can engage these things in Krishna's service very nicely. Right? So generally what we want is in line with our conditioning. So that means then if we do have it and we're Krishna conscious, we can engage it nicely in Krishna's service. But the distracting part is the conditioning, if we identify with it, then that those facilities will distract us from Krishna. That's why Krishna has a tendency not to give them. Or in such a way that we lose our interest. That's why many people go to the demigods, because the demigods will just give what they want. While Krishna tends to take away the desire for or not give it. Right? Because he's not foolish. Does this make sense? So if we focus on pure devotion, Krishna knows our desires. Then when those desires are useful in his service, then they may come. But since we're not worried about it, we don't care if they come or not. But if they do come, it's in line with what our nature is, so we'll be able to use them quite nicely in the service without problem. Does that make sense? Okay. This is evident in the following two verses. Although Dhruva Maharaj was a small boy, he wanted to offer prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead in suitable language. But because he was inexperienced, he could not adjust himself immediately. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, being situated in everyone's heart, could understand Dhruva Maharaj's awkward position. Out of his causeless mercy, he touched his conch shell to the forehead of Dhruva Maharaj, who stood before him with folded hands. At that time, Dhruva Maharaj became perfectly aware of the Vedic conclusion and understood the absolute truth and his relationship with all living entities. In accordance with the line of devotional service to the Supreme Lord, whose fame is spread, his fame is widespread, Dhruva, who in the future would receive a planet which would never be annihilated, even during the time of disillusion, offered his deliberate and conclusive prayers. Srimad Bhagavatam 4:9-4-5. Does that make sense? So, in other words, he removed his desire for these things first, right? Because for us, it's that, you know, having it is connected with the desire for it. We're not used to the idea of having something we don't have the desire for. Right? But it works out because we want to please Krishna. And then whatever facilities we have, we use them to please Krishna. Right? So then having those things will make us happy, not because what we'll get from it, but because how we can use it in Krishna's service. Does that make sense? So in other words, there's no loss in having facility that we don't have desire for, because then we can use it in Krishna's service. Right? In such cases, although the Kripana offers prayers to Lord Krishna for material things, the Lord takes away whatever material possessions the Kripana has and gives him the sense to become a devotee. Right? So because he's made the contact, he brings him closer to him. So he takes those things away that are getting in the way of his becoming a devotee. Right? Then, becoming a devotee, he sees that those things weren't important, or he sees how to use them in Krishna's service. So then he may get them back, he may not, it just depends on whatever is going to be better for the service. Right? The Supreme Personality of Godhead continued, "A pure devotee who is fully accomplished in the science of devotional service will never instruct a foolish person to engage in fruitive activities for material enjoyment, not to speak of helping him in such activities. Such a devotee is like an experienced physician who never encourages a patient to eat food injurious to his health, even if the patient desires it. O Maghavan, Indra, all good fortune unto you. I advise you to approach the exalted saint Dadyancha Dadichi. He has become very accomplished in knowledge, vows, and austerities, and his body is very strong. Go ask him for his body without delay." 50-51, Srila Prabhupada comments. Everyone in this material world, from Lord Brahma down to the ant, is eager to keep his body comfortable. A pure devotee may also be comfortable, but he is not eager for such a benediction. Since Maghavan, the King of Heaven, still aspired for a comfortable bodily situation, Lord Vishnu advised him to ask Dadyancha for his body, which was very strong due to his knowledge, vows, and austerities. Right, so he wants a good bodily situation. So then he says, okay, so you go ask Dadichi for his body. The Supreme Personality of Godhead continued, "That saintly Dadyancha, who is also known as Dadichi, personally assimilated the spiritual science and then delivered it to the Ashwini Kumaras. It is said that Dadyancha gave them mantras through the head of a horse. Therefore, the mantras are called Ashvashira. After attaining the mantras of spiritual science from Dadichi, the Ashwini Kumaras became Jivan Mukta, liberated even in this life." 52. In his purport, Srila Prabhupada narrates a story as told by the various acharyas who commented on this verse. The great saint Dadichi had perfect knowledge of how to perform fruitive activities, and he had advanced spiritual knowledge as well. Knowing this, the Ashwini Kumaras once approached him and begged him to instruct them in spiritual science, Brahma Vidya. Dadichi Muni replied, "I am now engaged in arranging sacrifices for fruitive activities. Come back sometime later." When the Ashwini Kumaras left, Indra, the King of Heaven, approached Dadichi and said, "My dear Muni, the Ashwini Kumaras are only physicians. Please do not instruct them in spiritual science. If you impart the spiritual science to them, despite my warning, I shall punish you by cutting off your head." After warning Dadichi in this way, Indra returned to heaven. The Ashwini Kumaras, who understood Indra's desire, return and beg Dadichi for a Brahmavidya. When the great sage Dadichi informed them of Indra's threat, the Ashwini Kumaras replied, "Let us first cut off your head and replace it with the head of a horse. You can instruct Brahmavidya through the horse's head, and when Indra returns and cuts off that head, we shall reward you and restore your original head." Since Dadichi had promised to impart Brahmavidya to the Ashwini Kumaras, he agreed to their proposal. Therefore, because Dadichi imparted Brahmavidya through the mouth of the horse, this Brahmavidya is also known as Ashwashira. Right. So now here's the fun part is, Indra, you know, because he was going to give spiritual science, he threatens to kill him. Right? So he has his regular head now, so we can understand Indra must have cut off his head. But whatever, that's not an important part of the story. But now here's this person he's threatened. Now he has to go to him because of his spiritual knowledge and strength and ask him for his body. Right? Does that make sense? So we see Indra always, because of his material desires, gets himself in such difficult situations. Now he's having to go to the very person that he insulted and ask him for his body. Right, so for someone to give their body, that's quite a serious, how you say? Yeah, as a offering. Right, so Indra, all he had to do was tolerate that the Ashwini Kumaras were learning philosophy. Right. And Dadichi is going to have to give his body for Indra's, you know, service. But it's on the instruction of Vishnu, so it's not going to be a problem for Dadichi. Right? So the problem is the Ashwini Kumaras, being physicians, are considered in a lower position. Like that. It is, but within the Brahminical, it's considered a lower science. Because you're always thinking of the body and how it works and mucus, bile, and air and all that kind of stuff. So it's not considered as good as thinking of, you know, the yajna and the mantras and the techniques and like that, or the shastra and things like that. I'm not sure exactly how it works here. Because they're demigods, so they're under his control, but at the same time, being physicians, they should be respected. But somehow or another, because of their being physicians, they're not given the position that they get an offering and sacrifice. They got an offering and sacrifice because of Chavana Rishi. Because he made the arrangement that they'll get. You know, so by his own power, then he enforced it. He was so powerful that even though Indra opposed it, they got it anyway. You know, so somehow or another, Indra and the Ashwini Kumaras have a problem. It means the problem's from Indra's side. The Kumaras don't have any problem. The Supreme Personality of Godhead continued. Dadyancha's invincible protective covering, known as the Narayana Kavacha, was given to Twashta, who delivered it to his son Vishwarup, from whom you have received it. Because of this Narayana Kavacha, Dadyancha's body is now very strong. You should therefore beg him for his body. When the Ashwini Kumaras beg for Dadyancha's body on your behalf, he will surely give it because of affection. Do not doubt this, for Dadyancha is very experienced in religious understanding. When Dadyancha awards you his body, Vishvakarma will prepare a thunderbolt from his bones. This thunderbolt will certainly kill Dhritasura, because it will be invested with my power. Right. So in other words, he's only going to be killed because of they wanted an incarnation of the Lord. So basically, Krishna's power in the form of the Narayana Kavacha is now being invested in the thunderbolt. Right. But still, Indra has to work. Right. Rather than just the Lord will come, kill the demon, and then they go on enjoying. No, they actually have to do some work. And because of his interfering in Dadyancha's giving a spiritual science to the Kumaras, now he's got to actually be involved with him. And it's because of this power that he'll get the benefit. And he was trying to see that this didn't go to others. Right? So it has a lot of Kanista elements to it. And so now he has to deal with this, right? Yes. Well, you will have a bit of a problem that everything you got from your guru, then you killed the guru. So that's possibly that it might have a bit of something there. But at the same time, as we have to remember, where did Vishwarup get the Narayan Kavacha from? From his father. And his father has created this demon. Not that it's greater than Narayan, but still you're dealing with someone very powerful here. Right? So Indra, you know, how you say, doesn't always think things out very well. Because of his position, power, authority, and then that attachment to that, it makes him sometimes, you know, think quicker than he should. I remember there was one, what was it? It was, I can't remember, I think it was some gentleman in the Middle East, I'm not sure where, if he was a sheikh or who he was, but he had a real fascination for the old Western six shooters, like that, you know, what the cowboys would use. But it may have been a more modern weapon, but I'm not sure. I kind of think it was that. And so, and one of the things about that was being quick on the draw. That was the whole thing about in the Westerns, is that whoever was quickest on the draw then won the duel, like that. And so he would always wear a gun, and he was so quick. He was like, I think at the time he may have been the fastest draw in the world. He was so quick. But it didn't work out so good for him, because one day, somehow or another, his son came into the room, startled him, and because he's just so quick on the draw, he shot his son. You know, and then after he notices who he shot. Right? So, you understand? So Indra's like that. He's very powerful and everything like that. So he immediately responds and then afterwards thinks. You know? So we see is that, you know, it doesn't work out for him so well all the time. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, who would give his own body, this verse explains, he will give it to the Ashwinis out of affection, since they are his disciples. Since they're asking, then you know, he'll give. Because he's on the transcendental platform. The Supreme Personality of Godhead concluded, when Vritrasura is killed because of my spiritual strength, you will regain your strength, weapons, and wealth. Thus, there will be all good fortune for all of you. Although Vritrasura can destroy all the three worlds, do not fear that he will harm you. He is also a devotee and will never be envious of you. Srila Prabhupada comments, a devotee of the Lord is never envious of anyone, what to speak of other devotees. As revealed later, Vritrasura was also a devotee. Therefore, he was not expected to be envious of the demigods. Indeed, of his own accord, he would try to benefit the demigods. A devotee does not hesitate to give up his own body for a better cause. Chanakya Pandit said, San nimite varam tyago vinashe niyate sati. After all one's material possessions, including his body, will be destroyed in due course of time. Therefore, the body and other possessions can be utilized for a better cause. A devotee never hesitates to give up even his own body. Right? So if you have something, if it can be used for a better cause, use it, because it will always be, it's going to go away anyway. It's just a matter of today or tomorrow, it will go away. So if there's some opportunity to serve Krishna nicely, it's used. Right? Not thinking, oh, I'll keep this for later, because you don't know what this later is. You don't know when it will go away on its own. Does that make sense? So that's why then things, we use whatever we have, facilities, in our services to the Lord. Yes?
If you put into this that the varnas, they look different. think about, because all we as devotees, we always look at this from the outside.
Yes. Yes, basically. Because that's the spiritual principle. The others then are the social. So it's not that from those others can't, but you'll generally see the reason that they can see it from a higher position is because of the devotional, because of their ashram development. But otherwise, Brahmana is then Brahman is important. Kshatriya is then, you know, authority is important. You know, Vaishyas, then money will be important. Shudras, their art, their expression will be important. But for the devotee, these things are just engaged in the Lord's service. So for the devotees, Brahman is what's important. But they may use knowledge, they may use protection, they may use economics, or they may use arts to express it. Because all of those can be used to express, you know, the Lord. Yes.
The story of Indra and Vritrasura, as described in Veda, is quite different from that one in Bhagavatam.
And that's a problem?
So.
No, but I'm saying, why would that be a problem?
I mean, why is that different?
It's just like this.
Yes.
Let us say we take the summer palace. Okay?
Yeah.
Now, the burning down of the summer palace, right?
Yeah.
The British, they have one view on that. Do the Chinese have the same view?
No.
So is it a problem?
There must be a right view.
But how do you establish right?
I
was just saying, the summer palace, how big was it? Where did that money come from? Right? It would have come from all the peasantry of China.
Yeah.
And so they had tons of money, right, the peasants?
No.
No, so then, and so,
tax.
Yeah, they pay tax. So was the tax always fair?
Not always.
No, okay. So then, you know, there may be some exploitation. The you know, so they built it based on exploitation, and the British burnt it down based on exploitation. So where's right? You understand?
But British invaded into China.
Yeah. Yes. And then the guys from the north that came down with the long ponytails, they didn't invade? Yeah, no, I'm just saying, you know, I'm saying, so on the mundane platform, you can't work it out. It has to be based on scripture, right? That's the only authority that is stable and steady, okay?
Yeah.
So therefore, we have to have faith that scripture is correct. There's no contradiction, right? Now, if there's anything that is missing there or seems different or something, that is because of we don't have enough knowledge to work it out. But it's never that the Shastra itself, there's something, you know, strange or wrong about it. Okay? Does that make sense? So, basically, now the Veda is known as Apurusheya, right? That means it's not written. It comes from the Lord, from His breathing. So that means it's always been there. Right? But every creation, there's, you know, at least once there's going to be this story of Vritrasura, no? So every lifetime of Brahma, at least once, is going to be a Vritrasura. But that means in all these universes it's going on, and that's every lifetime of Brahma, if not more often, right? The Nrisimha, his pastime happens so many times, you know, in one universe. So this pastime may happen many, many times. So all it is that what we're hearing here is one particular narration of the Vritrasura pastime that matches the question that was asked. You understand? And what's in the Veda, that will be another one.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Maybe another Vritrasura.
It's just like, let's say, okay, let's take another example. You understand? Yeah. The first one was to establish that without scripture you can't produce, you can't establish what's right or wrong.
Yeah.
Okay? So in here, then let us say we have the Chinese university professor Piranha. Okay?
Yeah.
And you got up in the morning and you brushed your teeth and did some other things and had something to eat and went to the school. Okay?
Yeah.
But in another rendition, you know what I'm saying, the Chinese university professor's wife's Piran, then there's a different story. The toothpaste was different, what you ate for breakfast was different. You know, whether you forgot to put on your socks or not, or you put on the wrong socks. So, now, are these contradictory?
No.
These two Piranhas. Why not?
Two different situations.
Okay. Same person, different situations.
Yeah.
Or completely different situations. So that's all, that difference in stories in the Piranha is just they're either different angles of the one pastime or completely different pastimes. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So there's never any contradiction. Yes?
Sometimes we know that the story is the same story. For example, different in different Piranhas because of the multiple.
Yeah. It's just like, let's say you come to the person, yes, you know, this person, they did this to me and that, and you're always envious and there's so many things like this and that, okay? So then they'll think, oh yes, you know, I should somehow or another be supportive of you, right? Yes, you're the victim. Did we necessarily tell all the parts of the story? Did we tell how we tried to get them back and how we did this and that? And no, we leave those parts out. But it's not that they're not part of the story, but it's that story is for that person. Okay? Yes? Now let's say, now just taking a very totally different approach, let us say that this person might, you know, was from a, you know, the Western Orthodox background. So then on Sunday they go into that little box with that little jolly work between the two parts of the box, and they tell the same story to the priest. Will it necessarily be the same? No, because you're not going there to confess what the other person did wrong. You understand? So it just depends upon your audience, then you tell more or less. So it's not that there's anything wrong in the story. It's not any tricks or anything like that. You may leave out a particular fact that particular group of people aren't interested in. You know, like Vishnu's the supreme or something. You know what I'm saying? Not that it won't be said, but it just, you tell the stories, you know. Does that make sense? Or, yeah, it's just, let's say you went on a holiday. So depending if you were in a mixed group of adults that you don't know so well, how was your holiday? You'll tell it in one way. If it's with closer, you know, mixed group, you'll tell it in another way. If it's just women, you'll tell it in a completely different way. You know what I'm saying? So that's how the Piranhas, they work. Depending upon the audience, then the story is presented. Or it may be that a completely different story is told. You know? So just like, let's say the question is, oh, what do you do for vacation? So depending upon the audience, you might talk about one vacation or another vacation. You won't talk necessarily about the same one. Does that make sense? So that's what's going on in the Piranhas, because there's a question being asked by a particular person or a particular audience, then a answer will be given that matches them so that they'll understand the absolute truth. Is that true? Yeah. So that's why it appears that there's so many differences. Okay. And so for the devotees, that's not a problem. But for the intellectuals, non-devotee intellectuals, then it's a big problem. They say all contradictory doesn't match. It's blah. So, But for us, it's just a different day, a different. So, in some sense.
Why there's no clear mention of time in the tradition?
But what's the point? What's the need?
That if the audience convinced that it happened at a certain time.
No, it only makes certain people of the it only makes people who only think in time and place convinced. But the point is those people by mundane intelligence you can't convince them anyway, so why waste your time? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
In other words, there's this idea that convincing modern intellectuals is really a valuable effort. But it's a total waste of time because they think that by their intelligence they can understand anything. They're so foolish they don't understand that no, you can only use an instrument in the area that instrument has a nature. Just like, let's say I have a thermometer. Okay? Can I use the thermometer to tell what was cooked for lunch?
No.
Or what flavor it is or what color it is? But that's the problem, is that the intellectual has a brain, but the brain is only intelligence to discern what's common and what's different. That's all it does as a machine. And they think that from that they'll understand unlimited. So it's two different things. How will it work? So therefore, the foolishness is they think because they have an IQ, you know, higher than the average guy, that therefore that they can know everything. And their opinion is the most important. So therefore, as an academic to try to convince them, it's a total waste of time. Because in the academy, you can't have conclusions. So it's a waste of time trying to think, oh no, we'll change the academy. No, you can't change the academy. You can change the people in the academy by making them devotees. But you're making a person a devotee, not an academic. Academics don't become devotees. Academics don't do anything. Academics produce more academics. That's it. They don't produce anything of substance. You know what I'm saying? Let's say someone has a degree in ancient Chinese letters. Okay? In the modern, you're not going to use that. But it's a point of interest. People will come. From that, you can produce another professor in that subject. But as far as reality, what you can do with it, that's very, very, very limited. You know, so unless you have an ancient text that needs some translation or printing or something, that may be the only time you can use it. But otherwise, there would be no practical. You know what I'm saying? You know, like in the Western Academy, then you have, you know, ancient Greek. You know, it's the same kind of thing. So the point is you can't have any conclusions. You're not having to deal with the substance of the academy is its ability to mental speculate and the taste gained from that. Does that make sense? Therefore, to try to make an academic into a devotee is a total waste of time because you can't. Devotee and academic they are not the same. There's no connection. You know what I'm saying? So, but that professor as a person, you can preach to him as a person. So we don't try to convince them on the academic platform because you can't. Because the academy is based on somebody brings up a theory. How does that theory get accepted? No one can poke any holes in it, right? Or at least not anyone of any importance. Okay, then it's established as the theory. And then what do they spend the next so many years trying to do? Find a hole in it. And as soon as somebody's finding a hole in it big enough, then that theory will be replaced by the new one. So the academy is not actually about knowledge and truth. It's about mental speculation. But if you say it's about mental speculation and therefore they enjoy speculating, who's going to respect that? So therefore you present it, no, it's all about knowledge and truth and betterment of society and all that, but that's not what it's for. It's, they have some fun, and nowadays now the corporations run the universities so as to produce people that can make money. Right? Does that make sense? In other words, a university degree previously was designed to create a gentleman. Had nothing to do with economics. But nowadays, why do you get a degree? So you can get a job. But that's not why the academy was started. It was started to create a gentleman. And then, for the higher study, previously in the academy, a professor was the person who was actually doing the practical work. Right? If you were had a doctorate in medicine, you were the one that practiced medicine. You had a doctorate in law, you're the ones who practice law. If you had a doctorate in theology, you were the theologian. Now they're just teachers. And when you get your graduate degree, that's when you start doing it. So they've changed previously, and now it's supposed to be people are more smart. You can understand people are more smart before. In the Middle Ages, they were smarter. Because you had to be a doctorate to practice the thing. Now you only have to be a graduate. But before, a graduate, it was just that you were an educated gentleman. That was all the more it was for. Practical social interaction. Does that make sense? So therefore, trying to change the academy within the academy, you know, through the methodology of the academy won't work. You have to change it by changing the people in the academy that they're devotees. Then you can change the academy. Or, why even bother changing it? What's the need of it? You know what I'm saying? Because you don't need a university degree to do most jobs. You know, you have to have a 4-year degree and this and that. You could go on site, on the job, and probably in 2 to 3 weeks learn what you need to do anyway. So it's not reality. Does that make sense? So that's why we're not worried that, oh, but it'll convince these people, because these people aren't worth convincing. You can't convince them. If they identify as an academic, you cannot convince them. They identify as an individual, as a human being, then you could deal with that part. Right? So in other words, us having programs and distributing prashads and all that, that will get farther than trying to, within the academy, by the academy's methods, trying to convince them. Because otherwise, then, where's that change going to happen? Looks like your piety is still intact, while this side, their piety just ran out. Oh, it's back. It must have been that feeling of remorse. And so then it came back.
Created the piety.
Yes. Does this make sense?
Yeah.
So there's too much, idea that the importance of the academics. But they're not actually important people at all. In the university they may be important, but outside the university, who cares? You teach in where? Beijing.
Yeah.
So how many academics are there in Beijing?
Lots.
Tens of thousands, no?
Yeah.
How many of them people on the street actually even know? Right? Maybe one if there's somebody really big, they did something, and And even that, most likely that's in the scientific area. You know what I'm saying? So there's a good chance they know more the politicians or the big businessmen than they do the academics.
Of course, yeah.
But it's not supposed to be like that. Why not? Because it's not real. But in the Vedic science, then everybody knows the academics. This is the whole thing.
Yeah. I'm sorry to everybody else. Hopefully by this afternoon we'll have the next one.
It's hot.
Yeah.
It's still hot.
Forgive me, Maharaj. I'm going to try to get the
rest of it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. So is that actually what you're going to do, or just you have a pina colada that's warming up unless you get back to
like
it?
Like a lime soda.
Oh, lime soda. Okay. Does that make sense? So it's very, very important to know that. Because otherwise, if one doesn't, if one has faith in them, then how will one ever get pure devotional service? Real intelligence is to be able to tell the difference between matter and spirit. Time's not important for that. You know what I'm saying? With their time and space, they figured out how to take an atom and break it into little pieces. But when they break it into little pieces, it also breaks up everything around it. You know, and then you can't live in that place for another 10,000 years. Right? Arjuna, by his mantra, could produce the same atomic reaction very specifically for one place, for one situation, and it doesn't, there's no fallout.
No, they try to do the same thing. Very located.
Okay, yes, yeah. but yeah. You understand? So that's the point, is that it's not that developed. It's very, very gross. So what we're talking about is, and that is considered a gross science in the Vedas. So the subtle science is actually the science of the, you know, knowledge of the difference between matter and spirit. Right? So now if they use their intelligence for that, that's to an advantage. Because one such person could then train so many others. Does that make sense? But if they're not interested in God consciousness, then all that qualification is just gets in the way. Does that make sense? Yeah. Like that. Because time and space, if they, the point is, we're saying, okay, it has to be according to time and space, okay? Then it'll be scientific. Now, of all the scientists in the modern academy, which scientists are considered the top by discipline? Right? It'll be the physicists, right?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, especially nuclear physicists,
yeah, yeah,
right?
Yeah.
They can't define time and space. So if they can't define time and space, why all this hoopla that, oh, it's not according to time and space? There's no one in the modern academy, not one person on the whole planet that can define it. Never has been, never will be. But the demand for that has to be according to time, that's cheating. That's like a businessman who totally fails, never done anything, never made any money in his life, and then saying, oh, well, we can't accept you, you know, because, you know, you know, we know, how's the, what's your method of making the money? So they don't know. They can't do. You know what I'm saying? They're if time and space is important to establish facts, then they have failed 100%. 100%. Just within their failure, then they define something that's less of a failure. And if, the, you know, some people can do that, then they'll say, oh, these are the great guys. You know, they couldn't do it. You know, so let's say they couldn't do the 100-yard dash, you know, like that. But, you know, the guy was able to get into the race. He couldn't compete, but he got in the race. Oh, he's a great guy. You know, because the other guys couldn't even get in the race. And then if you have one that actually got to the gate, whoa, you know, he gets the Nobel Prize. But nobody's in the race. You understand? You know, it's like, what do you call it? In a village of blind men, a man with one eye is considered king. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a blind leading the blind. So if somebody kind of can see form, then, you know, and that's it, you know, can't see anything, just a little bit of shapes like shadows, then he's the king. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Yes? Yes?
Intelligence is born of the mode of passion.
Yes, intelligence born of mode of passion.
But so, the Brahman is also very intellectual, but is it like the sadhana?
But it's based on shabda. It's not based on intelligence. So the modern academy are based on that intelligence. But intelligence is based on ignorance. Material intelligence is based on ignorance. because it means I am the body. So therefore the intelligence is used on how to get my benefit as the body. So therefore then they'll find in all kinds of amazing things and put things together and all that. But it's based, their intelligence is based on ignorance. While the Vedic, then the intelligence is based on goodness or pure goodness. It's based on the authority of the scriptures. So therefore, the Vedic science will uplift one. The modern will degrade one. Because ultimately you'll end up in ignorance. Right? The Vedic academic is supposed to develop in qualities. You know, character and these kind of things. Is this something burning? It's not these things, is it? No? Maybe somebody's burning grass in the field or something. Okay? But the modern is based on ignorance, so they just degrade themselves. Like that. In fact, generally the more intellectual they are and attached to that, you generally see their characters worse. You know what I'm saying? You know, let's say someone wins a Nobel Prize, right? In, you know, nuclear physics. Technically, that makes them the smartest person on the planet, according to the materialist. But other than that one time when they first won the prize, do you ever hear of them again? Do you hear of them at, you know, all the big social parties and this and that? No. Why? Because they don't know how to deal with people, how to interact with people. They don't have any character. They don't have anything. While, let's say, the guy gets a Grammy Award for his song, you see him at every party. You know, that also doesn't say much for modern society. Does that make sense? Yeah, I'm not sure what's going on.
I think the smell is from there.
Huh? But is the smell coming from around there? It's not hot. Oh, okay. The smell is gone. Okay? We're okay? So in other words, you go on campus, you preach to people, that will be good. You go in there and think, I'll become a professor, then I can change the academy. No one's done it yet. Can't be done. Like I mentioned, we said before, one devotee that I know of is having a strong influence on the Aryan invasion, and that's after 30 years of working on it. And that's just saying that, okay, the Europeans weren't, you know, there wasn't a group of people called the Aryans that aren't Asians and that aren't Indians and that they, you know, the whatever, and then they came in. So something that was totally made up, you know, may not be correct. You know. So, but we haven't established what is good. He's not establishing the Vedic culture as the original, it's the highest. The Sanskrit's the original language. The Veda is eternal. None of that. There's not one devotee who's doing that or will be able to do that.
No.
Where? You've heard of it? You're in the academy. You've heard?
Yes, I'm trying to do that.
Okay, if you can do it, great. But how, in other words, how long have you been working at it?
I've done it for many years.
Okay. Now, the same amount of time that you're putting into this, not this, that you should continue this, because this is your occupation. Why not try to make it Krishna conscious? So that's good.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, if you put the same amount of effort into preaching to an individual or a group of individuals, how far would they be in devotional service?
I'm not expert in that.
No, but I'm just saying.
I difficult to say. I just...
But you're the time man. Okay, let's try it from another angle. You have a student and you put in X amount of hours teaching them the subject matter that you have.
Yeah.
Do they learn something?
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
Yeah.
You take the same amount of hours and put it into trying to change how the government looks at education and therefore how the curriculum and syllabus is developed. Which do you get quicker result from?
The first.
That's all I'm saying. That's all.
One devotee who made great effort, we got it to parliament actually, and then we only then realized that the system is such that they can't actually change anything.
No. That's what you see. Every president says, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, as a candidate, they're voted in, and generally hardly any of that ever gets done. Because the system already exists.
They do something, but they get shot.
Yes, and if they do too much, yes, they get shot. Point is that's the thing, is that why is it like that? Because of the people involved. You change the people, then you change the system. But saying, I'm going to change the system, that'll change the people. That's never going to happen. You know, that's like saying, you know, I change McDonald's and I'll make everybody Krishna conscious. No, I could make everybody Krishna conscious. That'll change McDonald's. We have to, you know, so that's the thing. We have to know what actually is the essential point. So time and space is not the point. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Because Lord Vishnu wanted to save the demigods, Vritrasura, even though able to swallow the three worlds, would agree to be killed by the demigods. For a devotee, there is no difference between living and dying, because in this life a devotee engages in devotional service. And after giving up his body, he engages in the same service in the spiritual world. His devotional service is never hindered, right? So he's always absorbed in hearing and chanting about the Lord. He does that here. He leaves his body here. He does that in the spiritual world. So devotee, devotional service is never hindered. The situations that you do devotional service, that changes, like being in the material world or being in the spiritual world. But actual devotional service is never hindered. So that's why for Vritrasura, he's engaged in Krishna service as Chitraketu. Then he's engaged in Krishna service as Vritrasura. Then after leaving his body, he'll be engaged in Krishna service in the spiritual world. You know, but Indra thinks, okay, now I have a nice situation. He was enjoying himself. He insults his guru. He loses everything. Then, you know, they approach Brahma, then he gets the guru, then they get powerful, they get everything back. Then he kills his guru, then the demon comes, they lose everything again. That's Indra's life. You know, of course, very interesting, but as long as it's someone else, right? Yeah. But for Vritrasura, then there's no problem. He's always engaged in the Lord's service. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, in other words, if you know what you're dealing with, you can do something about it. But if you actually don't know what you're dealing with, then you have a problem. Like, say, someone wants to train horses. They have to know horses completely. You know, the little girl who's enamored, oh, horses are so nice, and this and that. She won't know how to deal with a horse or train a horse. But someone who knows horses and the science of what they are, what they can do, what they can't do, they can get something done. Otherwise, we'll be talking about, well, maybe if they could fly, you know, then we could do so many things, you know. But they don't fly. So the same way, as if you know the academy, then you know what you can do. And if you think that it's something special and actually intellectual, then you won't be able to do anything. So that's the difficulty. You go in knowing what it is, then you can deal. You just speak their speak, that's all. But if you actually live their speak, you've already lost. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. Important verses. Srimad Bhagavatam 6.9.22. Avishmitam tam paripurna kamam svenaiva labdhena samam prashantam vino pasar pat yaparam hi balisha Swala langulena tititariti sindhum. Tititarti sindhum. Free from all material conceptions of existence and never wonderstruck by anything. That's our point. Right? The Lord is always jubilant and fully satisfied by his own spiritual perfection. He has no material designations, and therefore is steady and unattached. Right? So if we identify as something, then we can't do it properly. Right? If we're wonder struck by it, we identify with it, we can't function in it properly. Right? Others may think you're doing a great job, but in reality, to free yourself from the material entanglement, we can't. That Supreme Personality of Godhead is the only shelter of everyone. Anyone desiring to be protected by others is certainly a great fool who desires to cross the sea by holding the tail of a dog, the demigods to Lord Narayan. 6948. Kim durapam mai prite tatapi vibhu darshabha mayekanta matir nanyam Mato vanchati tatvavit. O best of the intelligent demigods, although it is true that nothing is difficult for one to obtain when I am pleased with him, a pure devotee whose mind is exclusively fixed upon me does not ask me for anything but the opportunity to engage in devotional service. So even though anything's possible, they're not interested in the possible. They're interested in devotional service. That's what makes them special. Right? So they have everything, whatever's required. But they're not interested in that everything. They're only interested in serving the Lord. Therefore, then they can have it and use it. Right? So, that makes sense. So we find in the material world, even people are successful in material things the more they're detached. You know, maybe ultimately the result once they get it, but at the time of working, if they're attached, they can't function. So you just keep that going, then that comes up in the perfection of devotional service. So. Okay. Bonus page. Okay, then Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Prescribed Duties for Mankind, Study Guide Part 4, Story of Ritrasura, Chapters 10 through 17. Okay, chapter 10, the battle between the demigods and Vritrasura. 11, the transcendental qualities of Vritrasura. Chapter 12, Vritrasura's glorious death. Chapter 13, King Indra afflicted by sinful reaction. Chapter 14, King Chitraketu's lamentation. Chapter 15, the saints Narada and Angira instruct King Chitraketu. Chapter 16, King Chitraketu meets the Supreme Lord. Chapter 17, Mother Parvati curses Chitraketu. Right. So that's how he became Vritrasura. Because the question comes up, you know, about the story, naturally, but then how is it that he is such a great devotee? So then they'll have to go back to when he's Chitraketu. Chapter 10, The Battle Between the Demigods and Vritrasura. Pratigya. O demigods, one who has no compassion for humanity in its suffering and does not sacrifice his impermanent body for the higher causes of religious principles or eternal glory is certainly pitied even by the immovable beings. The Pratigya of this chapter is spoken by Dadichi Muni in verse 8 and is further elaborated in Srila Prabhupada's purport. Instead of wasting one's life for temporary bodily comforts, one should always be prepared to give up one's life for better causes. After all, the body will be destroyed. Therefore, one should sacrifice it for the glory of distributing religious principles throughout the world. Right? So that's, since the body will be destroyed anyway, it's used in Krishna's service. So only how much is necessary to keep it working very nicely, right? So the subtle body, the gross body that is comfortable, that it functions, that's how much we deal with. Right? Does that make sense? So because the body only requires a certain amount, but there's going to be a difference in what's required. But then you're going to have the subtle body, and so that requires a bit more of a range. So because of that, then you see a greater difference in what different individuals require. But that's the approach. The body's engaged in the Lord's service because it's going to be destroyed anyway, so there's no need of trying to keep it forever. One just keeps it so it functions so you can do nicely in Krishna's service. Right? So, does that make sense? Chapter 10 summarizes questions and answers. Several rhetorical questions are exchanged between Dadichi Muni and the demigods, but they do not fall under this study. Adhyaya Prakashika. The 10th chapter describes receiving the bones of Dadichi, making the thunderbolt and the victory of the Devatas over the demons. Following the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the demigods approached Dadichi Muni and begged for his body. Dadichi Muni, just to hear from the demigods about the principles of religion, jokingly refused to relinquish his body, but for higher purposes he therefore agreed to give it up. For after death, the body is usually eaten by low animals like dogs and jackals. Dadichi Muni first merged his gross body made of five elements into the original stock of five elements, and then engaged his soul at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus he gave up his gross body. With the help of Vishwakarma, the demigods then prepared a thunderbolt from Dadichi's bones. Armed with the thunderbolt weapon, they prepared themselves to fight and got up on the backs of elephants. At the end of Satyayuga and at the beginning of Treta Yuga, a great fight took place between the demigods and the Asuras. Unable to tolerate the effulgence of the demigods, the Asuras fled the battle, leaving Dhritarasura, their commander-in-chief, to fight for himself. Dhritarasura, however, seeing the demons fleeing, instructed them in the importance of fighting and dying in the battlefield. One who is victorious in battle gains material possessions, and one who dies in the battlefield attains a residence at once in the celestial heavens. In either way, the fighter benefits. Shloka Anusharanam, summary of verses. 1-12, the demigods approached Dadichi Muni for his bones. 13-33, the demigods attacked Dhritarasura. Verses 1-12. Sri Sukadev Goswami said, after instructing Indra in this way, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, the cause of the cosmic manifestation, then and there disappeared from the presence of the onlooking demigods. O King Parikit, following the Lord's instructions, the demigods approached Dadichi, the son of Atharva. He was very liberal, and when they begged him to give them his body, he at once partially agreed. However, just to hear religious instructions from them, he smiled and jokingly spoke as follows. Right? Because then, you know, you're going to, you know, how you say, he's going to do what their desire, but he wants to hear from them religious principles, because otherwise they get distracted so much by just performing their duties, they forget why they're supposed to do it. Right? Because in other words, we're doing things, but you should know why you're doing them. That you get then more benefit. So he's just jokingly getting them to speak these things.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
What would be more important, doing and not doing, or knowing and not doing? Say that karma is superior to
jnana. No, it means the position of detachment is higher than attachment.
But we say also that work is better than no work.
Yes, that is there. But its point is the yes, it just depends upon how one's defining no work. You know, yes, if there's inactivity, then that's useless. That's why then the demigods just want the Lord to get rid of the demon, and they're doing nothing, so better they do something. But the point is that if one's making an effort in detachment, that itself is an effort. Right? But just to do nothing doesn't mean that you're not going to be materially entangled. Srila Vishnu Chakrabarti Thakur elaborates. Although he was pleased and smiled, there was an indication that he would scold them by refusing the request. Dadichi said, O elevated demigods, at the time of death, severe, unbearable pain takes away the consciousness of all living beings who have accepted material bodies. Don't you know about this pain? In this material world, every living entity is very much addicted to his material body. Struggling to keep his body forever, everyone tries to protect it by all means, even at the sacrifice of all his possessions. Therefore, who would be prepared to deliver his body to anyone, even if it were demanded by Lord Vishnu? 3-4, right? So he already knows, but he's just having some fun. Srila Prabhupada comments. It is said, Atmanam sarvato rakshet tato dharmam tato dhanam. One must protect his body by all means. Then he may protect his religious principles and thereafter his possessions. So without the body, you can't apply religion. Without religion, then how there'll be possessions, right? So possessions can be given up for religious principles, right? Does that make sense? You protect the body, then you can engage in religious principles, right? So that's the basic principle, like that. But if there's something higher, as will be discussed later, then that's another thing. Like that. So we're saying is that the body is being sacrificed into the Samkirtan Yajna, the fire of the Samkirtan Yajna. So it's engaged in devotional service. Otherwise, just engaging the body to make the body comfortable, what's the point? Since the body will go away anyway. No matter how comfortable it is, still it's going to go away. So if it's sacrificed in the fire of Samkirtan, then there's some benefit. Does that make sense? So there we're engaging the body in the actual highest religious principles. Right. Does that make sense? This is the natural desire of all living entities. No one wants to give up his body unless it is forcibly given away. Even though the demigods said that they were demanding Dadichi's body for their benefit in accordance with the order of Lord Vishnu, Dadichi superficially refused to give them his body. Right? Because they're not considering all that. They're not really considering the sacrifice he's making or anything like this, or it's actually the Lord Vishnu is the important element in this. They're just thinking getting their work done is important. They're not actually really considering Dadichi and the Lord so much. Does that make sense? The demigods replied, O exalted Brahmana, pious persons like you, whose activities are praiseworthy, are very kind and affectionate to people in general. What can't such pious souls give for the benefit of others? They can give everything, including their bodies. Those who are too self-interested beg something from others, not knowing of others' pain. But if the beggar knew the difficulty of the giver, he would not ask for anything. Similarly, who is able to give charity does not know the beggar's difficulty, for otherwise he would not refuse to give the beggar anything he might want as charity. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. The sage speaks part of the verse. Selfish people do not know the pain of others. If the requester knew others' pain, he would not ask. The devas speak the other part of the verse. Selfish people do not know the pain of others. The donor knew others' pain, he would not refuse to give. Thus the verse has two meanings. Those who request and have attachment to the enjoyment of swarga do not know the suffering they cause to the persons by taking his bones from whom they ask. If they knew from good intelligence as devatas, they would not ask. Since you do not have intelligence, you are not real devatas, but are equivalent to animals such as tigers. Hearing what the sage said, the devatas then replied, the donor who is selfish and attached to the happiness of long life and possession of a body with senses does not know the suffering of the requester caused by attacks of the fierce enemy. If he knew, since he should have intelligence and knowledge as a sage, then he would not say, I will not give, since he is capable of giving. Since you lack discrimination, you are not a real sage. Because you are filled with lamentation and illusion, you are equivalent to a cow. At least he's a cow. They're tigers. Right? So I'm a cow, you're a tiger. There's a superiority here. Hey. Srila Prabhupada adds, this verse describes two people, one who gives charity and one who begs for it. A beggar should not ask charity from a person who is in difficulty. Similarly, one who is able to give charity should not deny a beggar. These are the moral instructions of the Shastra. Right? So that means is you don't ask someone in difficulty. If they're in difficulty, you don't ask someone for something that's very difficult. If it's something that they have done, that's another thing. Right? These are the moral instructions. Chanakya Pandit says, San nimite varam tyago vashase niyate sati. Everything within this material world will be destroyed, and therefore one should use everything for good purposes. One is advanced in knowledge, he must always be prepared to sacrifice anything for a better cause. At the present moment, the entire world is in a dangerous position under the spell of a godless civilization. The Krishna consciousness movement needs many exalted learned persons who will sacrifice their lives to revive Krishna consciousness throughout the world. We therefore invite all men and women advanced in knowledge to join the Krishna consciousness movement and sacrifice their lives for the great cause of reviving God consciousness of human society.
So that's what it's about. That's what the mission is. Right? And then to that degree, then you do. Not that, no, I have this body, and even though I say I'm not this body, I will try my best to get all facilities for this body that, you know, is in the way of you know, distinction, adoration, and profit. Right? And that's not the point. Right? Yes? No, but is the balance of that, therefore, now is that engaging so nicely in Krishna's service is wrong? Is that a balance? You understand? Because otherwise, that's the direction it takes. Now that full surrender, that's fanatic, we don't need that, you know, like that, we have to be more balanced. But what is balance? Balance means how fully you can be engaged and not ruin your health. But if you get health goes and you blame it on devotional service, the body is a seat of disease, right? Prabhupada explains, according to Ayurveda, that all 3,000 diseases that there are always residing in the body at any one time. Now, it's just that due to, anxiety, overeating, or uncleanliness, you give opportunity for one of the balance of mucus, bile, and air to go out, so it allows one of these diseases to pop their head up. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, let's say I have a whole bunch of holes with lids, right? And there's something underneath there, right? Now, if I open a small hole, then something small can poke their head out. I open a big one, something big can stick their head out. I don't open any of them, nothing can stick their head out. But they're all there. So this idea is, oh, I got sick because of devotional service. There's a good chance they would have been sick anyway. You know, I ruined my health. Oh, what's to say you wouldn't have ruined your health anyway? Right? Only devotees are in hospitals. The karmis are not in hospitals. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is that why even bother with that point of view? If you do, then all you're going to cultivate is mundane consciousness and another birth. You know what I'm saying? So the point is, okay, in my situation that I'm in, how much can I get engaged in devotional service that I can maintain devotional service? Right? And so you try to do your best.
They were drug addicts before.
Yeah. Yeah. Point is drug addicts, and so then, you know, so then all that's great for health. Getting up at 9 o'clock in the morning is a regular thing, is really good for health, right? Eating unregulated, anything you want, any volume you want, any time, that's also perfect for health. You know what I'm saying?
Smoking,
drinking. One devotee, I think he was in Germany. It may have been Krishna Kshetra Prabhu. But he went to an eye doctor to check the eyes, you know, just for a regular check. You know how they have that one, like that board that has letters on it? There's one big letter, and then it has, you know, a couple of next down, and then back, like down onto really small. And he was sitting there looking at it, you know, and the doctor was doing something, went out, and he was looking at it, and then he struck him that it actually was a sentence. Normally it's just, you know, some random letters. But it was actually a sentence. And what it said was, too much sex ruins your, you know, your eyesight. You know? So he saw this back probably in the 80s or 70s. So before, it was known. There were studies done back, I think, in the 30s about how having sex reduces your physical strength and everything like that. Previously, also in sports, is that the before a game, 2 weeks before a game, there was no interaction between men and women. Absolutely just wasn't there. So they knew these things. But then with time, they just give it up, because who wants to give up sense gratification? You know what I'm saying? Because before, people had mental strength, but they had therefore to worry about the physical. Nowadays, people don't have any mental strength. So therefore, the guy being with his, with the girl, then is actually going to make him more confident, even though it'll make him physically weaker. But better, a confident guy, he'll do more than an unconfident guy. So now these teams travel with the ladies. You know what I'm saying? And with that background, then we're making these comments. You know what I'm saying? So, and then somehow or another, it's, you know, all this Indian food ruined their health. You know, the devotional lifestyle. No, the point is okay, you're sick now at 50 or 60. If you hadn't done this, you probably would have been like this at 30, 40. You know, so be happy that it was later. And Prabhupada said, if you get a cut on your finger, you should have had your arm cut off. But Krishna reduced the karma. So, you know what I'm saying? You know, if you had bad digestion, then you should have had that for 100 lifetimes. But you only have it for this lifetime. Or, you know what I'm saying? So this kind of approach isn't useful. The point is to look at it, okay, I have to be intelligent. I want to engage in service in a way that's stable, steady. So what can I do that is stable? Let's say someone's a book distributor. Okay, instead of going out 7 days a week, I only go out 5 days a week. And then physically it'll work. Or only, I'm not so good, I can go out 2 days a week. You know, or I can go out, but I can't go out for 12 hours. I can only go out for 10 or 8 or 6. You understand? You work out what actually works and then maintain it. Yes, but with the comfort zone means just on the edge of it. It doesn't mean outside the comfort zone. It means at the front of the comfort zone. Yes. We're definitely outside of someone else's comfort zone. I know, you know how you say my lifestyle is definitely outside many people's comfort zones. So yes, we're doing that. Yeah. Someone else's comfort zone. My mother would definitely not want to dress and do the things that I do. So it's definitely outside her comfort zone. So see, I am living outside of the comfort zone. It means within your, what is your comfort zone, you should be at the front edge of it. You don't have to be on the other side, otherwise then how does it function? You know, in other words, one should be doing one's best. One's best is not outside. Outside is beyond what you can do. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Yeah. You know, in other words, let's just say, for example, if someone could distribute books for 6 hours a day, right? So distributing books for 6 hours a day, that's at the edge of their comfort zone, because they can't distribute for seven, right? So six is there. What it means is don't go out for five or four. Go out for six. You know, it doesn't mean go out of your comfort zone, go out for 12. No, that's not, and how long will that last? All these rah-rahs, how long do they last? Unless you find a balance that's dealing with the individual, then it won't work. To inspire people, to get them out of ignorance, to get them, that's good. But you have to then, are they going to take responsibility? They're telling you, function outside your comfort zone. Are they taking responsibility? Are they going to show you where that line is? If there's a problem, are they going to help you come back? If you're not there yet, are they going to help you get there? No, they're just going to talk and hope you do it, and then they'll get the benefit. That's it. You know, so it's like the demigods. Just talk. No, before. with Vishnu. And then says, now go do something. So then. Now they're talking to Adichie. But, yes, but when are they going to go out of their comfort zone? Yes, never, yes. No, it's not at all. Because the point is, he's transcendental. So he's here, he does service because there's no reason to leave his body because he's already serving the Lord. If the Lord wants him to, then he leaves and goes back to the spiritual world. In other words, he's on the transcendental platform. What's the point of him sitting here with an inferior body and situation to serve the Lord when he could be in the spiritual world in a superior body and situation? But the demigods don't know that. Right? They just said, you know, Vishnu said, and that they're trying to get their work done. You know? So in other words, Dadichi and Dhritarasura, they're the heroes in this story. And as we'll find out at the end of this story, it's Indra who's the loser. He's, yeah. The first time when he walked in with the new garland and all the mantras and that, you know, then he was the winner. And after that, it was downhill. Yeah. Okay. At the present, okay. The great sage Dadichi said, just to hear from you about religious principles, I refuse to offer my body at your request. Now, although my body is extremely dear to me, I must give it up for your better purposes, since I know that it will leave me today or tomorrow. Right? Because the Lord has said. If Vishnu hadn't said, then he's not under any obligation, technically. O demigods, one who has no compassion for humanity and its suffering and does not sacrifice his impermanent body for the higher causes of religious principles or eternal glory is certainly pitied even by the immovable beings, Srila Prabhupada comments. In this regard, a very exalted example was set by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. Quote, we offer our respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of the Lord, upon whom he should always meditate. He left his household life, leaving aside his eternal consort, whom even the denizens of heaven adore. He went into the forest to deliver the fallen souls who are put into illusion by material energy. To accept sannyas means to commit civil suicide, but sannyas is compulsory, at least for every brahmana, every first-class human being. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had a very young and beautiful wife and a very affectionate mother. Indeed, the affectionate dealings of his family members were so pleasing that even the demigods could not expect such happiness at home. Right? Because it's mentioned that if for the man, if he doesn't have an affectionate wife or his mother at home, what's the point of having one? Right? So he's got both. So then by standard, it's good. But not only that, there is so pleasing that even the demigods who have so much piety, they can't expect to have that kind of facility at home. Right? So he's giving that up then to go out and preach. So that's the whole point. Lord Chaitanya is, you know, he's giving up. And then we'll see. And the six Goswamis is the same. They had their position running a government. And it wasn't a small government. It was a big government. When they, in the at the time of, or after... what was it called? Not liberation, emancipation,
independence.
Yes, thank you. India, independence. Then it was they were trying to decide what would be the national language. So some individuals then said it should be Sanskrit because that's the original language and all that. But somehow or another, not being that Shastric or religious, they didn't go for it. So they're trying to find another language. So Bengali was one of the languages considered because of the volume of people. I think it had the maximum amount of people speaking it. Right? I mean, if you go down to just local regional languages, there's more people speaking Bengali than, let's say, Marathi or Punjabi or Hindi everyone speaks because they made it the national language. But they were considering Bengali. Right? Because Bengal had the maximum amount of people. They are the chief minister and the treasurer for that kingdom. So that means they were basically the biggest civilized kingdom at the time in the world. Right? Does that make sense? So, they gave that up to preach. Nevertheless, for the deliverance of all the fallen souls of the world, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas and left home when he was only 24 years old. He lived a very strict life as a sannyasi and refusing all bodily comforts. Similarly, his disciples, the six Goswamis, were ministers who held exalted positions in society, but they also left everything to join the movement of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Srinivasa says, Chyakdva Turanam Asesha Mandala Patim Shrenim Sada Tuchavat Bhutva Dhina Ganesha Kau Karunaya Kaupina Kanta Shri Kau. These Goswamis left their very comfortable lives as ministers, zamindars, and learned scholars, and joined Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement, just to show mercy to the fallen souls of the world. Dina Ganeshvakau Karunaya. Accepting very humble lives as mendicants, wearing no more than loincloths and torn quilts, Kopina Kanta. They lived in Vrindavan and followed Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's order to excavate Vrindavan's lost glories. Similarly, everyone else with a materially comfortable condition in this world should join the Krishna consciousness movement to elevate the fallen souls. The words bhuta dhyaya maya mrigam dayi taye pshitam and dina ganesh shakau karunaya all convey the same sense. They are very significant words for those interested in elevating human society to a proper understanding of life. One should join the Krishna conscious movement, following the examples of such great personalities as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the six Goswamis, and before them, the great sage Dadichi. Instead of wasting one's life for temporary bodily comforts, one should always be prepared to give up one's life for better causes. After all, the body will be destroyed. Thereafter, one should sacrifice it for the glory of distributing religious principles throughout the world. Oh, therefore, one should sacrifice it for the glory of distributing religious principles throughout the world. Since the body will be destroyed anyway, you only make it as comfortable as it needs to be to do work for the preaching mission. Right? That's it. Does that make sense? So for them, you know, they could work on the platform they do to give the example. But we work whatever it works for us, right? That worked for them. If that works for you, great. But if not, then we work at whatever works for us, right? So we don't go beyond that. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premananda ki.